The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Before we even get to Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, let me say that I realize I'm doing this show against the backdrop of an attempted coup, an insurrection in the state capital, in the nation's capital. Insurrectionists, rioters got into the Capitol building, and you've seen images where, you know, they're waving a Confederate flag. That's a flag of an army that fought against the United States of America. It represents treason and sedition and slavery. They fought for slavery. There were people wearing shirts that said 6MWE, Camp Auschwitz, meaning 6 million was not enough, referring to the Holocaust. These are white supremacists, and they somehow gained access to the Capitol building. And what athletes have pointed out throughout the day is, well, why don't you listen to Russell Westbrook say what he feels, because this sentiment was echoed throughout sports by both African-American and white players and coaches. Here's Russell Westbrook.
To see if those roles were reversed, if those were African-Americans and black people, it would be totally different. Unfortunately, there's so much going on, and there's so many people losing their lives, whether it's to COVID, and losing their family members. And sometimes we can't control civilians and what they do. Just control what we do to make change in our society. And that's the biggest thing that we can do now. Unfortunately, we can't control what people do, how they move, but we can control our own actions and figure out how to make the world a better place. It's just crazy, almost like a movie when I see it talking to people, and obviously now being in D.C. and my family there, it definitely hits a little different for me now.
Right, and you hear that from people who live and work in that area. Dominic Foxworth on First Take both yesterday and today talked about how he walked through these mobs of people. And this was yesterday before the insurrection. The reality is many have pointed out that many athletes and others have pointed out that were it mainly African-American people storming a Capitol building, and the Capitol building in Washington, D.C., the outcome would have been much different. In fact, Joe Scarborough, who was before he became a TV personality, was a Republican congressman, said, "We all know that if they were African-American, they would have been shot in the face," was the quote. This country has always had a very high threshold, very high tolerance for dead black people, and that's been the case since the inception of this country, which was founded on the original sin of slavery through Reconstruction, Jim Crow, and up to the present day. There have always been forces, white supremacist forces in this country, and they've rallied around different causes, whether it's states' rights or some imagined grievance like election fraud that didn't occur. I mean, the only fraud that was attempted was by the party who lost. 127 representatives, including senators, voted to not certify the election. Just sore losers. If black people vote, we don't want to recognize it. And now that you can't do that legally anymore, they're trying other legal and illegal methods, extra legal methods, to make sure that black voices are not heard and not represented in our putative democracy, which is already slanted away from urban areas. And we know what urban is code for. For example, Democrats won something like 40-something million more votes than Republicans in the House and Senate to get a tiny little majority of seats. But beyond that, what we saw happening was the president, was Trump, calling for the date, January 6th, and directing the mob toward the Capitol building. And then they did what he asked them to do. And insofar as our politics represent the racial divide, which clearly they have in a stark way in the last 4 years with this administration, we see that white people have a long way to go. Chris Rock is the first I remember talking about this, saying people talk about all the progress black people have made. No, white people have made the progress. Black people just want to be treated with the same respect that white people are treated with, and obviously we're still not there yet. But as Dr. Martin Luther King said, the moral arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. Dominique Foxworth of ESPN was kind of pushing back against that, not that idea, but was really more vocal about the idea that justice postponed is justice denied. And for those who feel, especially black people today, who feel, you know, we hear a lot of well-intentioned white people saying, hey, the moral arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. In other words, progress is being made. We're not trying to hear it. Justice postponed is justice denied. I agree. It's not okay what's happening, but it is okay to both point out that progress is being made. In other words, when the Confederate flag is inside the state capitol, that's largely a symbolic victory for a moment for the person who got it in there, who smuggled it in there. But the fact is that largely that's a reaction to, and this moment in our history is a reaction to the browning of America. I've known since I was, you know, in the third grade reading the Weekly Reader and PS41, that the day was going to come where white people ceased to be the majority of the country, you know, over 50%, and would be only the plurality, meaning still the largest population of any ethnic population, but not over 50%. And right now, we're not there yet in this country. That's going to happen, according to estimates, another 35 years or so. But we are right now undergoing the very moment at which babies being born white people are, if they are still in the majority, it's very, very slight. It's very close. They're slipping right now as we speak into plurality, meaning no longer over 50% of the population. And the question always was, when this moment came, how would people react? And what we see is the white supremacist kind of impulses and organizations even still extant in the country have these very powerful revanchist feelings, meaning they want to take back what they feel they've lost through civil rights and try to kind of hold on to what they've had until now. It's very difficult for people to tell basketball players, for example, to shut up and dribble at this moment when, as Stacey Abrams, who helped get Warnock, who is now the senator-elect in Georgia, a black man in the Deep South, Ossoff, a Jewish man in the Deep South. They both won their special elections. But Warnock was running against Kelly Loeffler, who was never elected. She was appointed, but she was senator. She was the incumbent who Warnock was running against. And Loeffler came out against Black Lives Matter. And the WNBA players on her team on the Atlanta Storm, and the WNBA players, by the way, have been right up front, at the forefront of the kind of athletes' social consciousness movement of this era and of this moment, started wearing T-shirts saying, vote Warnock. In other words, vote for the opponent of the owner of this team. Tough to tell athletes to shut up and dribble now, isn't it? When WNBA players say, wait, the person who owns this team is opposing Black Lives Matter? Well, what's that all about? Well, what is it about? Black lives don't seem to matter. Black people are mistreated. By the way, Colin Kaepernick was speaking specifically of law enforcement interactions with communities of color, but more broadly about social justice and racial injustice when he knelt before the flag, which is, you know, it's an optional ceremony, right? It's not mandatory that you stand. And many would argue, including me, that's the most American thing you can do. The greatness of America is you have freedom of speech. You don't have to stand for the flag. And America was founded on protest, and protest continues in an attempt to make this country a better place. Peaceful protest. That's not what we saw yesterday. And think of the kind of purple-faced reaction, the anger and rage expressed by many white people at Colin Kaepernick's merely peacefully kneeling, which is a sign of respect, incidentally. That came about because Nate Solder said, who also played in the NFL and was in the military, met with Kaepernick and said, I feel bad when you don't stand for the flag when you're just sitting. Is there something we can do to show that you're showing respect even though you're protesting? And Kaepernick said yes, and they came up with this solution where he kneels. And a lot of these same people from yesterday were so outraged that Kaepernick did that. Now I would expect people of goodwill, and I'm talking especially to white people who don't get this, to be way more outraged that there was a violent attempt at a coup of the United States government to overturn a lawful election. This is Doc Rivers talking about what happened yesterday.
As an older black male, I've seen police dogs being unleashed on people, and then you see the day where there's nothing. And so that's an emotion that I have, right? You know, Tobias and those guys probably don't have that emotion. So, you know, and I don't know how many guys even watching TV today. You know, you just don't know, but you know it's going to be the talk for both teams. You know, Washington, just think about them. It's where they live right now. So they have a lot on their plate, probably worried about public safety of their families. So this is a tough one tonight, I got to tell you.
When I talk about, you know, they're not going to shut up and dribble anymore. Not that they have been, but that very idea is ludicrous. I mentioned Stacey Abrams, who helped get Warnock elected and has an amazing story. And she said recently on social media, she referenced the fact that her she is the great-great-great-granddaughter of slaves, the great-great-granddaughter of sharecroppers, the great-granddaughter, etc. And you saw the progress in every generation, but still until very recently, her family wasn't allowed to send their kids to the schools in which the family worked, right? And eventually it led to her, who is a powerhouse in American politics and a force for good. And she talked about the responsibility that she feels, Stacey Abrams feels, the way she put it, she said, creating space for people to show that they can, that is for them, that their options are limitless, not limited. And NBA players and NBA players and athletes, led by African-American athletes, but also joined by their white allies, have, I think, done a very good job of setting an example that shows that everyone is welcome. Everyone is welcome in the multiracial coalition of goodwill. That's the America that we'd like to see, the multiracial coalition of goodwill. And, you know, unfortunately, not everyone in the country right now are good faith actors. But look, so I'm aware that all that stuff is going on. And yet this is a sports network. You've tuned into a sports show. And I am also aware that many want to, you know, you can find this news all over the dial, online, social media, on television, everywhere you go, your friends, family. And sometimes you want an escape from the kind of awful news of the day. Although, lastly, I'll say this. The reality is, just as the Tea Party was a reaction to Barack Obama, a man of color who was president of the United States of America, keep in mind Kamala Harris, the vice president-elect, is a woman of color, and the fact is even the law enforcement reaction and kind of acquiescence, the rolling over to the insurrectionists, you know, it remains to be determined, because one officer seemed to open the gates for the rioters. Another was taking selfies with the rioters. And again, some of them wearing white supremacist T-shirts and sweatshirts. You know, part of that is a reflection of the current administration and the cooperation in terms of how they want to use law enforcement and decisions that are made. And there is a new administration set on January 20th to take over, with a woman of color as vice president, incidentally, or not incidentally, and maybe change and progress, which is not linear. It's not always perfectly smooth, always ascending to greater and greater justice. It's choppy. It's up and down. But maybe some of those attitudes of law enforcement rather than their worst impulses be kind of encouraged and enabled, some of their better impulses will be encouraged and enabled. And finally, I'll say, it's not like the evil of white supremacy, once, you know, conquered in a generation, is now, you know, dead and gone forever. No, it lays dormant. And the history of humanity has been in every generation. We have to be vigilant, and good people need to resist the temptations of the weaknesses of the human spirit as represented by the rioters and insurrectionists in the Capitol yesterday. Okay. I am now going to start talking about sports, on-the-field sports. It's not an easy kind of term. It's a hard turn, but nevertheless, it must be done. There's a job to do, so we're going to get into NFL Wild Card Weekend. The Ravens and the Titans. And Lamar Jackson, by the way, speaking of race, it is interesting, but, and I suppose what you can say is what I just told you was straight talk wireless. No contract, no compromise.
This matchup between Baltimore and Tennessee, if you like explosive playmaking down the field, physical play in the trenches, I mean, it's got everything.
You have to find a way to win one game. Vrabel made it clear that is the only objective.
So, look, Lamar Jackson needs this one. There's no doubt about it. And what I was going to say is to kind of tie it into the previous subject, once upon a time, the kind of responsibility felt by African-American quarterbacks was, you know, you have to show because there are so many barriers to ever becoming a quarterback in the NFL if you're African-American. Warren Moon had to go play in Canada for a while, for years, before he could actually try to make him a receiver, before he could become a quarterback. And he was a great quarterback for many years in the NFL, record-setting guy. But like, all this kind of responsibility to show African-American men can lead and can play the position, that's not there anymore. If you look at the best quarterbacks in football, who's the best? Patrick Mahomes. And among the best are Deshaun Watson and Russell Wilson. So there's not that same kind of pressure on Lamar Jackson. Although I will say that there is the kind of vestigial or kind of remaining sense that a running quarterback, a quarterback known more for running than throwing the ball, which is how black quarterbacks were kind of stereotyped for many years, can't really be the guy you want. And it's interesting because how much of that is real? After all, throwing the ball is more effective than running it. That's why, and the rules favor it, the fans like it more, and it's a more effective offensive weapon. That's why you see increasingly the vertical passing game through the years is, you know, more and more used. But, you know, part of it is that, and part of it does still have those kind of racial undertones or overtones. I don't know if it's going under and over. I know they're tones of some kind. But anyway, but part of it is just the reality that you are probably going to have to be a pretty accurate passer, or at least a guy who can beat you from the pocket, in order to be an all-time great, in order to be a Super Bowl champion or a guy who competes year in and year out for Super Bowls. And there's a lot on Lamar because he is so fast, and that's a devastating weapon. I'll say, though, that his passing, though maybe it took a kind of, it didn't, the trajectory wasn't as kind of continuous as it had been the previous couple years, where he starts out at age 21 and very accurate passer for his age in the NFL, and then improves the next year, and then maybe takes a little bit of a step back, right? Isn't where maybe that trajectory would suggest he would be by now. I don't really think it's an issue of can Lamar Jackson pass the ball accurately enough, because I've seen him do that enough times against good teams and defenses who will take away the run. I think the question is, can Lamar Jackson win under the brightest possible lights, under the most pressure? He has not yet beaten the Chiefs in the regular season. You got to do that if you want to get out of the AFC. He has not yet beaten the Ben Roethlisberger Steelers. He's only played them once, and he lost. And he hasn't won in the playoffs, lost two games. Now, the encouraging thing is, the first year in the playoffs, he looked completely out of his depth. He's a very young quarterback, and he looked terrible in the first half, like he didn't belong. By the second half, he had gotten much better, still not good enough. In his second playoff appearance against the Titans last year, he put up some big numbers. He still made some mistakes. He wasn't his normal top-level self, but he was much, much better than he'd been in his first playoff game. Can he be better than that? He's going to have to be better than that against a team that seems to have his number. Beat him last year in the playoffs, beat him earlier this year, and is favored. Sorry, well, they're not favored, but they are considered the underdogs with the best chance to beat him again, and it's at Tennessee. There is enormous pressure on Lamar to win this game. Coming up, everyone's focused on Josh Allen, but is there someone we're forgetting about in this Bills versus Colts matchup? The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge.
Max, the podcast.
By the way, I mean, like, you're heading into the NFL playoffs, but you see the Phoenix Suns? You know, sometimes you see a team on paper before the season starts or even what they did the previous season, and you have high expectations, and then they come out and meet it right away. That's going to be a problem. Phoenix is going to be a problem. Dallas is going to be a problem in the NBA. Some teams on the rise. We're going to get into it. Not a lot today, but a lot going forward. We're going to get into it a little bit today. You can reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline.
And you saw what Josh Allen did, even in that environment.
Josh Allen has been lights out all season.
They're dangerous.
They don't want to let up.
And in large part, because the quarterback is just that physically talented.
Yeah, all the focus has been on Josh Allen going into that game. The quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, who now own the AFC East. And the Dolphins are a good team, and the Patriots look out for them next year. But Buffalo right now owns the NFC, the AFC East. And by the way, going forward, who would you bet on next year? Buffalo has a stud quarterback, I think top five in the game. One Mahomes, two Rodgers, three Wilson, four Watson. And you can maybe even reverse that. We'll see. And five, Josh Allen. He's going to have some comp next year from Justin Herbert, too. But Josh Allen is a stud. And every year he got better, right? He started out about a touchdown to an interception. And for a team that didn't win a lot, and then it was two touchdowns to one interception. For a team that was winning more, and now it's three touchdowns per interception to a team that won a whole lot. And so the focus is on Josh Allen, an ascending superstar. Certainly a star, but can he be a superstar? Can he be, you know, on that? Look, Mahomes is a tough level for anyone ever to reach. Really, I only think Aaron Rodgers ever did it. But can he be Deshaun Watson? Can he be in that very, like, the? Can he be in the argument for best quarterback in the game, not named Patrick Mahomes, going forward? Right, because Rodgers is older. There's a lot of focus on Josh Allen, for good reason. What about Philip Rivers? A lot of the story of this game is Philip Rivers. Frank Reich was really rewarded because he had that. He was, you know, really supported Philip Rivers after a slow start. And guess what? They're in the AFC playoffs, and they're a good team. These are evenly, like, on paper, it's an evenly matched team, right? Maybe Indiana Indianapolis is a little bit better against the run. But they both give up around the same number of yards, around the same number of points. Indy's a tick above them on the list. Their defenses are comparable. They both have some weapons on offense. Who has the better quarterback? I mean, everyone says Josh Allen right now, right? But think of what's on the line for Philip Rivers in this game. He came out in a draft class, just like, you know, you group certain guys together. So Goff and Wentz and Dak, same draft class, right? Think of how Trubisky gets killed because of Mahomes and Watson, right? Well, he came out, Philip Rivers did, with Eli Manning and Ben Roethlisberger. In fact, Roethlisberger was picked 9th or 10th. Rivers went 4th and was traded to the Giants. Eli wound up, obviously, on the Giants because he refused to go to San Diego. But it was Rivers and, I want to say, Nate Kading and Sean Merriman maybe was the deal. But they were traded for each other, Rivers and Eli. And Rivers went ahead of Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger's won two Super Bowls. Eli's won two Super Bowl MVPs. Rivers put up big numbers under Norv Turner, an offense that, that helps you out that way. Much simpler offense than the one that Eli had to run, for example. But Rivers putting up numbers every year. Tough as nails. The Iron Man streak. He and Eli were competing with that for years. You know, team leader. Family man. All that stuff. You hate to see him end his career as the only one of those three who never won a Super Bowl. But the fact of the matter is, I thought he had some good chances in recent years. And he's underperformed in the playoffs, again, like when it's mattered most. I thought he looked like a deer in headlights against Belichick's defense a couple years ago when they had to go to Foxborough. And I really thought, back then the San Diego Chargers, I really thought that the Chargers had a real chance to win that game. They didn't. Rivers was out of his depth. This is a guy who's been to an AFC championship game, but never to a Super Bowl, and obviously has never won one. Well, you can't start that journey without beating Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills, and because these are apparently evenly matched teams, if Rivers and the Colts lose, people will look at the quarterback position. You know, one team had a superstar, and the other guy had a faded older guy. There's a lot of pressure on Philip Rivers in this game. A lot. Ronald in Florida, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Yes, sir, Max. I'm going to make it really quick, dude. I've been listening to you for a long time. I'm a big-time boxing fan. I just want to thank you, dude. You are truly a champion for justice. I remember back in the George Floyd thing and all of that, you were still talking this. Thank you, Max Kellerman. You are truly a champion for justice.
Well, thank you very much for that. I think it's disgraceful that black people are in the position where they have to thank, you know, allies who are white in the media for telling you the truth and for standing on the side of righteousness. You should never have to be in that position, but as long as you are, I will speak the truth. Eli in Maryland, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, just calling to see, do you think Washington has a chance to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Saturday?
Not a good one. Not a good one. Tampa is peaking at the right time. And let's not forget, Washington was a little bit lucky to beat the Eagles. The Eagles, who were capable of upsetting teams, like they upset the Saints when the Saints were on a roll. But let's keep in mind that Washington, playing in disarray at the quarterback position, an injured old guy and a young guy who they let go, right, on the last game of the season where they're fighting for their playoff lives and the Eagles are resting guys. Look at the injury report before the game. It's ridiculous. They were still lucky to win. It took going for it on fourth down instead of kicking a chip shot field goal, which would have tied the game. And then Doug Peterson yanking Jalen Hurts from the game in order for Washington to squeak by the skin of their teeth. Now that team is going into a game against Tampa that's been routing teams. And also, like, other good teams have played the teams that Tampa's routed recently and not done as well. Again, they've beaten them, but not done as well against the Falcons, for example. It would be the reason, I think, when you talk about, like, who's facing the most pressure, not throughout the playoffs. I think Mahomes is under the most pressure to win the Super Bowl because he's expected to. I think Rodgers is facing pressure because, look, they drafted his replacement. How many more shots is he going to get at this thing? Lamar Jackson has never won a playoff game. But Tom Brady, I know he's the GOAT and everything. Of course, his legacy is secure and all that. But was it more Belichick or was it more Brady? Well, if you get bumped in the first round by a sub-500 team in disarray when you are loaded for bear, that's a bad look. That ain't exactly Joe Montana taking the Chiefs to the AFC Championship game once he left the Niners, you know? That's where my head is with all of that. You know, I think that Washington has a good defense, but not enough to overcome a very potent Bucs team right now, especially with Brady having this much to play for. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. They'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at Progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. By the way, Lindor to the Mets. Guy can pick it. For a dude who hits 30-plus home runs, he can pick it at short. It's a big move for the Mets. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Do the Chicago Bears have a shot? Axe Max is next.
Max, the podcast.
Think the Bears can pull off a double-digit upset? You can reach me at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. NFL playoffs kick off this weekend, of course, and we've got Ravens-Titans, and that is a good one. A lot on the line this Sunday at 1:05 p.m. Eastern on ABC, ESPN, and ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN Megacast broadcast, which is awesome, continues on ESPN2, ESPN+, and Freeform. Chicago Bears, biggest underdogs of this weekend. They're getting 10 points. Give them a chance against the Saints? Do you? Let me tell you why the answer is yes. I think the Bears have a chance. Now, I like the Saints. And in fact, had the Saints wound up with a better record than the Packers, maybe I'd even take the Saints to get out of the NFC. The reason I don't like them out of the NFC right now is if they have to go to the frozen tundra, a team that plays better in the dome anyway, you know, even then in some like warm weather city, let alone going to the Packers, that's tough, and especially playing Aaron Rodgers the way he's playing right now, with a surging Packers defense, actually. Very tough. So the Saints should, of course, beat the Bears. That's why they're favored. But can the Bears win? Here's the thing. Did you see the way Trubisky took his benching as opposed to, say, Carson Wentz? Big crybaby about it. And then undermines the team by, like, leaking to the media. Like, every time Jalen Hurts takes the ball, I'm very unhappy. I want to be traded. I have to consider whether I want to stay. It's like, Carson Wentz, please. You're awful. What do you mean? It's not your decision. Your contract's untradeable. Trubisky just said all the right things, supported Nick Foles at the time, even when he may have been a better choice because he's more mobile behind the offensive line, which was porous. Trubisky took it like a professional, stayed ready, and then stepped forward and played good football after that. And do you think a team is more or less likely to follow him? So that's one reason. And the other, that the Bears have a chance. In a full contact sport, which is still a lot about trench warfare, right? Up on the line of scrimmage. Who wants it more? All those terrible sports cliches that really don't usually apply to other sports like baseball and basketball apply in the NFL. When you're physically confronting a guy in a full contact sport, the who wants it more absolutely makes a difference. Not like in baseball, a guy goes into a slump, he has to relax sometimes. Don't try too hard. It makes it worse. In football, you try harder, you usually do better. So leadership makes a difference. If who can tap into those kind of reserves of adrenaline in their teammates and make them believe, and, you know, who functions as a unit better and believes in each other more. It absolutely makes a difference. And the other thing, it's not saying the Saints don't have that with Breeze, they do. But I think the Bears also have that with Trubisky because of the way he handled the situation. And the other thing is, the Bears have so much talent on defense. Like, the Saints are a really good defense, and they played well for stretches this year, and at one point looked like the best defense in the NFL. But even at the Saints' best, I never looked at them and thought, yeah, they have more talent than the Bears. Adam in Pennsylvania, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hello. I just want to say something
ahead,
about the Bears-Saints game on Sunday. I do think the Saints will win the game, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout because it seems like every time I see the Saints in the playoffs, they always like play down to their competition. I mean, last year they lost to the Vikings, and it seems like every time they have a good record heading into the playoffs, they never like play their very best. I still think they're going to win.
Well,
Sunday,
let me answer that. But not in a blow, in a tough game. Yeah, I get that. Thing about the Saints is they're a bit snake bit. They're the victims of no excuses, but they've been the victims of some bad calls at inopportune times, high leverage moments. Drew Brees has looked worn down at the end of seasons. He's old, you know, but he did have a rest from football activities, on-field gameplay, because of the fractured ribs and punctured lung. If there's a silver lining to recovering from that, it's that maybe you'll have a little more gas left in the tank for this playoff run, if they go on one, or at least for the first game against the Bears. The other thing is, Rivers has a number two receiver in Emmanuel Sanders, and he should have his full complement of offensive weapons for one of the few times this season. Michael Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Alvin Kamara, everybody. So I hear what you're saying. I agree. I don't see it as a blowout. But for the reasons, some of them that you pointed out, I think it can be a good game. What does the football scientist have to say about wild card weekend? That's coming up in a minute. Jackson in Texas, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Oh, hey,
Jackson,
Max,
you got 20
thanks
seconds.
Thanks for having me. I absolutely think the Bears have an excellent chance to upset the Saints this weekend. We all talk about Devonta Adams, how he is the best receiver in the NFC, best receiver in easily the NFC North, but we forget that Mitch Trubisky
has a guy.
We got
5 seconds, dude. All right, he couldn't get it out. Max Kellerman Show, football scientist, coming up.
Max, the podcast.